It's the Independent Football League podcast. Once a week, we're in your ears talking all things EFL. Today, Luton and Wigan seek new bosses. Burnley chow down on some Lancashire hot pot. There's goals aplenty in League One. Sparky ignites Bradford. And we hear from a current EFL gaffer. Welcome to What the EFL. How you doing then, listener? I hope you weekended well. We're here to talk about the Football League. It's me, Matt Davis Adams, joined by my two pals, Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin. How are you, chaps?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, all good. All good. As you well know, I've just been telling you that I was out on Saturday night, which was a very rare occurrence. I just think I'm probably too old for Shoreditch these days. It's way too cool for me. But yeah, I gave it a go. And that's all you can do, Matt.
Sam, you still look all right in the suburbs when you're out. Doesn't make you feel quite so old, does it, if you're in a pub that's not in a cool part of London?
Bit fine in my manner now. Wait until Clarkie tries Dalston. If you think Shoreditch is cool, blimey. Try that next time.
Easiest way to alienate listeners is to talk about London stuff too much. So let's move on pretty swiftly. Give us a follow on Twitter if you like, at EFL What the is the handle for that. And if you want to sponsor our podcast, you can email whattheefl@yahoo.com. All right, we've got loads to talk about today. We're going to start with some news. Couple of managerial movements. We mentioned Nathan Jones going to Southampton last week. That one has now been confirmed. Headline here, Adrian, that I note from the BBC Sport website from, what, 3, maybe 4 days ago now. Luton want a quick appointment to replace Nathan Jones. Not that quick, therefore, given as they are still looking at the time of recording. Obviously, they're going to appoint somebody probably just after I publish this episode. Neil Critchley is the current favourite, which, without wishing to sound unkind, sounds like a terrible idea to me, seeing he's just done the dirty on a championship club to be a number two in the Premier League.
Oh, come on, Matt. Done the dirty. I mean, he's just seeking, you know, he had a chance to go to the so-called promised land and he took it. I know what you're saying. I do know what you're saying, but the opportunity to be Steven Gerrard's assistant at Villa was a weird one to many of us, but it's Aston Villa, it's the Premier League. He'd not worked at that level, obviously, apart from being at Liverpool in the under-21. So, yeah, it was an opportunity for him. I don't think we should hold it against him, is the point I'm making. He was pretty good at Blackpool as an underdog manager, and that's what Luton are in the Championship. So he was able to sort of marry pretty good technical football with the other side of the game. Yeah, I think Blackpool and Luton, there are strong comparisons in terms of the way they go about their work. So I don't think it's a crazy link. Rob Edwards, I would say, is a good fit in terms of his desire to sort of create that family environment, and he's very, very big on that. But he does like a sort of prettier football, more expansive stuff. And I think Luton, I don't know whether they can play that in the Championship. I think they've got to be a little bit more industrial at times. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Gary O'Neill's the interesting one. There were tears in his eyes at Bournemouth at the weekend, and it feels like he might not get that job, but he is proven to be a really, really smart head coach, isn't he, Gary O'Neill? I've been tremendously impressed with him. He's got a lot of Championship experience as a player. Yeah, I would go for O'Neill or Critchley if I were Luton, but let's see.
My Luton supporting friend Marcus wants Rob Edwards just for what he calls the delicious irony, of course, having left Watford earlier this season. Stephen Robinson also in the frame. Sam, it's your old club, of course. Is there one of those four names that leaps out at you, or is there somebody else?
No one above anyone else there, no. I think they'd all have their own merits, yeah. Has to be in tune with what they've done previously. Different personalities. If I think of the way Rob Edwards has conducted himself in comparison to Nathan Jones, you couldn't get to contrasting styles in the technical area. I think Rob Edwards is one, probably said it before, stands back, lets the players problem solve, you know, obviously work for England. I think that's quite usual with the modern managers. And I think he takes that kind of tack. Nathan Jones is obviously incredibly vibrant on the touchline. Gary O'Neill probably going to lose out to Bielsa, if there's any truth in that in that rumour. Probably rightly so at this stage of his career. But yeah, he would be a really interesting appointment. And yeah, Robbo was a brilliant captain. Stephen Robinson obviously played for Luton well over 100, 200 times, whatever it may be, was there during all the success up to the Championship previously. We'll know Mick Harford, we'll know Gary Sweet, the people at boardroom level. And he's definitely got something about him. That said, it didn't go brilliantly at Morecambe and Oldham, if you think he's had a couple of gigs in the EFL. So whether that would put them off, we'll have to wait and see. But he's doing really well at St Mirren. They've had some, I think they beat Celtic this season, obviously performed really well there, you know, very much an underdog in the SPL. So he'll definitely get another gig, but whether the Championship would be maybe a little bit far-fetched at this stage, we'll have to wait and see. But has to be someone who I think buys into the model, doesn't want loads of established players straight away that, you know, throw money at it. That's not going to happen at Luton. We know the way that they recruit, and I'm sure they'll be looking for someone who's in line with that type of model.
All right, so that's Luton. Also looking for a new gaffer are Wigan. Since our last show, they dispensed with the services of Liam Richardson. They got a quick uptick by beating Blackpool at home on Saturday. Clarkey, I found this one pretty infuriating, to be honest. I mean, let's put to one side the fact that he literally saved their star striker's life last season. He got them promoted a couple of months ago and they gave him a new contract last month. This feels, I know they're not on a good run, and you know, that is mitigation that has some credence to it, but they ought to have stuck with him a bit longer, hadn't they?
2 weeks ago, he signed a new deal. It is amazing. Or 2 weeks prior to his dismissal anyway, a three-year deal. That's an expensive mistake, isn't it, from the Wigan board? Things aren't quite right there. There were reports that the players and staff were paid late again. That was, I think, the third time it's happened since the summer. And now they've got to pay off a manager that they've just given a new deal to. It's crazy in terms of a business sense, and also crazy given what he's produced with the team. I think he was absolutely magnificent last season in getting them promoted. And yeah, they were having a wobble, but yeah, he's a very good manager. And it was overly brutal, in my opinion. So yeah, Wigan gone down in my estimations with that call.
Just looking at the odds for this one, Sam, even money favourite as we record is Sean Maloney, former Wigan player, of course. Neil Critchley, second favourite at 4-1. Big Dunk as well, you can have in there with Rob Edwards as well. Steve Bruce has been put in, obviously, because Steve Bruce. Who are you picking for this particular gig?
Well, Big Dunk did that thing to Jimmy Bullard at Wigan, didn't he? So he's got a history on that pitch. I don't think I'll be going down Big Dunk's route, as scared of him as I am. I don't know. I think Clarkey alluded to it there. Obviously, it's been a poor run, and maybe there's scope to make them a little bit more easy on the eye, or maybe that's going to be the ambition. I think they kind of limped over the line a little bit last season. Remember them losing to Sutton as well in that Papa John's semi-final. Had the opportunity of maybe doing something of a double. So I don't think the football's been particularly good. Not to say Liam Richardson didn't do a really good job, but maybe that's what they're looking at. A little bit more entertainment. I think it's been a tough watch this year at times for the Wigan supporters. So I don't know. Neil Critchley, in my memory, was quite similar to maybe what Wigan have been. You know, very organised. They were very solid defensively, and going forward, it was quite functional. So I don't know if he's going to reinvent the wheel and play very modern passing football. Sean Maloney's obviously a hero there and seems to have done some really good things in his early part of his coaching career. So that would be an exciting one, wouldn't it? Not that you should always go for an ex-player, but yeah, that might have a bit of X factor about it.
We shall see. With that one, let's stay in the Championship. This is something that you brought to our attention, Clarkey, the fact that there are so many hotshots vying for the Golden Boot in the Championship. We've got a whole cluster of players with 9 goals to their name, specifically Sargent and Jai, Yates, McBurney, Rodriguez, Hogan, Brereton, Diaz and Jokeres. There's some pretty good striking talent in the second tier this season.
It's outstanding, isn't it? Yeah, the 9 of them. It just got me thinking, you know, who would I like to play? If I had a dream front two, which of the two would I put in there? You know, that was what I was thinking when I saw this list. All different types of centre forwards. You've got McBurney, the sort of big bruiser up the top. You've got Yates, who's such an unselfish workhorse. Sargent, sort of raw but full of legs. And then you've got the sort of all-round players like Ndiaye and Jokeres. And they're the two, I think, that I like the best. I like watching the best. Illiman and Jai been sensational this season, and Victor Jokeres is one of the form players in the division. We'll get to talk about him a little bit later, but yeah, it's some race for the Golden Boot this season. Five of them haven't taken a penalty either. So you know, most of the players on this list are having great campaigns. You know, Scott Hogan, that's what a surprise that is to see him up there as well. So, yeah, it's a good old race for leading scorer in the Championship this year.
We haven't conferred here either, but I think there'd be a shout to say McBurnian and Jai probably are the best two.
Yes,
but
yeah.
Gokeres and Jai are the two that I've noted down, actually, okay. That I think would complement each other. And Jai's only got the two assists, but as Clarke says, he can do a bit of everything. He'll obviously roam to the flanks and he can knit it together. And I think he'll probably supply more goals for McBurnie as the season goes on. Gokeres is maybe arguably the best natural finisher of the lot. And I had a little look into it. His goals have been worth 11 points. Oof. And I think I didn't get round to checking everyone else, but it kind of dwarfed the majority of the others in comparison. I think Brereton Diaz actually was on 8. And he, in my mind, feels like someone who scores big goals, you know, the solitary goal in 1-0 wins, etc. But 11 points at this stage is great going, shows his importance to Coventry. And I think those two, yeah, they would really complement each other. And Joya to drop deep, do the work, Gokeres to
tap. You wouldn't want to mark them, would you? Yeah. You wouldn't want to mark those two. They are slippery so-and-sos, that is for sure.
You're right to point out Hogan as well, Clarkey, because I'm just looking at the goals scored column for the teams that these guys play for. And Birmingham have got the fewest out of anybody in that list. They've only got 23 goals and he scored 9 of them. So in terms of significance to his team, that goes without saying. Johnny Williams didn't feature for Swindon at the weekend to ensure he was available for the World Cup squad for Wales. Sam, I kind of had this down as a lovely gesture from Swindon to make sure that one of their main players this season would get to perform in what might well be the pinnacle of his career. But there's another reason that Swindon want him to go to the World Cup too, right?
There is. Let's speak about the human level first, because I did think it was a nice gesture from Scott Lindsay. The right gesture. In my experience, I'm sure Clarkey's had it as well. It's all encompassing being a player, being a manager, and therefore they want their best team out there. They only worry about their own jobs, don't they? And their own 90 minutes, if you like. So to let one of your best players, top scorer at the moment, man in form, to have the afternoon off because he's got bigger fish to fry, if that's a phrase, I think it's a nice gesture, a nice human gesture. But yeah, there is a financial incentive as well. $10,000 per day, I think the clubs are going to be given while their players are away at the World Cup. So that could end up being quite a hefty sum for the clubs that have two or three, maybe even more, away at the World Cup. In Swindon's case, I think they hope to maybe get a little bit of money for Jojo Wallacott as well. I'm not sure entirely how that works out. He's obviously now at Charlton, but won't be going because of an injured finger, I think, in the warm-up on Saturday. But Johnny Williams being with the Wales squad should mean a nice little return for the club.
Well, it starts, that payment, Sam, starts now. So, because it's the official preparation period. So,
could they send him Saturday? He's gone.
Off you go. Off you go.
Well, it's 20 grand, yeah.
10 grand. I mean, even if Wales are absolutely, if they stink the place out and they come home early, they're getting 100, well, they're getting more than 100 grand, aren't they? So that is a very prudent decision from Swindon, is it not, to safeguard that investment. 100 and odd grand will, you know, that'll allow them to maybe buy somebody in the transfer window, wouldn't it?
Good work, Swindon. Right, next today, we'll get into our weekend review as the Championship saw its final action for nearly a month and plenty happened in Leagues 1 and 2. Well, Burnley got the better of Blackburn in the East Lancashire derby. A 3-0 home win meant the Clarets were popping the champagne on Sunday after recording their biggest victory in this fixture since 1965. Now 3 points clear at the top after an Ashley Barnes brace and an Anas Zarouri goal gave them the win against their fierce rivals. Not much happened in the first half here, Clarkey, but overall, this is the perfect response for Vincent Kompany's team after that thrashing at Sheffield United in their last league game.
Totally, yeah. Putting that into context, I think this is a huge performance, a huge win for them, because there were some weaknesses really exposed by Sheffield United, and Blackburn didn't come close to exposing any of them. They didn't really come close to having a shot. They had one shot in the game. I mean, that is unreal, really. And a little bit of an embarrassment, I would have thought, for them in such a big game where their supporters are so pumped up. The shot count was 17-1 in Burnley's favour, so you can't argue with the scoreline at all. Maybe from Blackburn's point of view, they just were a bit too young and raw and weren't quite ready for a match of this intensity. I don't know. They certainly didn't turn up. Couldn't get a grip of the game in midfield. Tyler Morton, who you know I like from the scouting report, you know, couldn't get his foot on the ball. Jake Garrett, Lewis Travis, etc. So, yeah, this was one-way traffic. And yeah, in the second half, it got a bit messy, didn't it? I was really chuffed for Ashley Barnes. If you remember, a few weeks ago, Ashley Barnes was subbed at halftime at Sunderland. And it changed the game in a positive way for Burnley. And, you know, I think Manuel Benson came on. They scored. They won the game 4-2. And he's barely got a look in since. And everyone talks about the praise of the tactical change, and rightly so. There was always a victim there, you know, a sort of scapegoat. And Ashley Barnes was that guy. So he was given a chance in the Carabao Cup, scored against Crawley, and then kept his place, which I think is a good call from Vincent Kompany. He had 9 shots in the game. Was a total menace for that back three of Blackburn Rovers. They couldn't handle him. And yeah, all of a sudden, Ashley Barnes has gone from sort of almost half forgotten man to main man at Turf Moor, which is, you know, it's typical football, isn't it? So yeah, well played him. Well done, Zaruri. I mean, he was good again, wasn't he? Wonderful cross. One of the best crosses I've seen this season for Barnes' first goal. He looks some talent. So yeah, well done, Burnley. I think they deserve to be top at this stage of the season. Them and Sheffield United are the standouts.
Fireworks on the pitch here. I mean, literally fireworks on the pitch. Play was halted after fireworks were let off from outside Turf Moor during the closing stages of the game. They landed close to the players and the ref, David Coote, had to briefly pause play. Officers made 5 arrests while a small number of fans were ejected from the stadium because there was a bit of trouble inside as well. Let's move on. Middlesbrough came from behind to beat Norwich at Carrow Road. 2-1 the score here, to mean Borough up to 14th as the Canaries suffer their 7th league defeat of the campaign already. Let's start with the winners here though, Sam, because it's looking rosy for Borough all of a sudden under Michael Carrick. They've won 3 of 5, losing just once under him, and this is the best way to do it as well. It's a long trip to Norwich from anywhere, but from Middlesbrough in particular, and the best way to send those travelling supporters back is with a 92nd minute winner like they got here.
Yeah, brilliant second half performance. 10 points from 5 games, as you say, Matt, under Carrick. I feel like I need to give a little apology to the Middlesbrough fans, because I don't think I said smash and grab, but I kind of alluded to the fact that it may have been unwarranted, and it wasn't. This is on the TV on Saturday. I watched someone actually tweeted me and said, oh, clearly doesn't watch the whole game. Mm. I don't watch the whole 36 90-minute games on the weekend.
You'd still be on the first week of the season if you did that.
6 hours from 3 o'clock till we go live at 9. So I didn't watch all 90 minutes of Norwich Middlesbrough. You got me. But I did watch quite a lot of it, bizarrely. And the reason I probably said what I did was because Norwich had 7 shots to Middlesbrough's 1 after half an hour. Had they got the second goal, it could have been a completely different game. But Middlesbrough were excellent in the second half. So sorry about that, guys. And the 2 goals were brilliant. The second one, well, sorry, McGree. Someone has compared it to, well, said it should be up for the Puskas Award. But me and Courtney Sweetman-Kirk, who we were on with, said that it was a bit of a shank. If you watch it, amazing technique, but it actually just skews off the side of his foot and finds that top corner, which looks aesthetically beautiful. And it made me think of Paul Scholes, who always said that he just tried to hit the target and you're not going to catch it perfectly. And therefore, it's going to skew a little bit one way or it's going to hook the other way and sometimes find the top corner. And that's what happened with that strike. Still brilliant execution, but it wasn't even my favourite goal of the day. Second one, Akpom, amazing feet on the touchline. Him and Jones exchanged passes and Crook scored with his first touch. And it had been coming. It had that sense, because Norwich hadn't extended their lead in the first half. And yeah, going really well. I think it's important to mention Akpom again. Been involved in 5 goals in 5 games since Carrick came in. Hackney, the midfield player, has pretty much played every minute. Mm. He hadn't completed the 90 minutes under Chris Wilder. He is getting rave reviews, obviously changed the system as well, but there just seems to be a bit of a belief about Middlesbrough, which is clearly lacking at Norwich. And yeah, I wouldn't say it's an apology, but I felt I was a bit harsh on Dean Smith as well. And I worked with Dean, he's a brilliant coach, great guy. But, you know, I think sometimes you got to take into account the results, the position, the dissenting voices from the stands. And I think he's going to be up against it now. I said again that, you know, the points return he has got from the last four games may just keep him in the job. Two wins and a draw, I think it is, from the last four. But I think they're teetering on the edge a little bit, the Norwich supporters. And that's just because of the previous Championship campaigns where they played such beautiful, intricate football, got the results. And interestingly, they have had seven defeats already this season. The two previous Championship campaigns, six in the first promotion season, seven in the second. Seven defeats already this season, I think, tells the story.
Playoffs at best for Norwich, I think, this year.
Tough run of games for them when they come back too. Swansea, Blackburn, Luton, Reading, Watford and Preston. All teams that are in and around them, as the common parlance goes. Also in and around that area are Coventry. Their comeback keeps on coming. The Sky Blues into the top half of the table now, less than a month after they were second bottom. This after a 2-0 home win against a QPR side, only outside the playoffs on goal difference themselves, despite losing their last three and failing to win in five. We've already spoken about Victor Gyökeres a bit, Clarkey, but he was the star man here.
Yeah, they're just on fire at the moment. Seven wins from their last nine, Coventry. 10 clean sheets in their last 13 matches. That is solid, isn't it? Really good from them. And yeah, this was quite an impressive performance. Obviously, QPR, probably a good time to play Queen's Park Rangers. With Mick Beale also being linked with Glasgow Rangers, that's a bit of a distraction, isn't it, at the moment? I wonder what's going to happen there during this break. I don't think he'll go, given how strong he was on not letting the QPR players down when he was linked with the Premier League job. So yeah, watch this space, I guess. But for Coventry, yeah, just great momentum. If they win their two games in hand, they'll be fourth. So we have to consider them as possible playoff contenders. I always think Coventry, when they've got that box midfield back with the sort of familiar names, so it's Sheaf, Hamer, Allen, O'Hare. I mean, you could go back a season, two seasons, maybe even three, I don't know. And those are the four players in behind the main striker that have done really, really well. And yeah, they bossed this game, those guys. And particularly O'Hare was really, really bright. Lovely little assist for Gyökeres at the end. So yeah, it's all going very, very well. They've got the best or most informed striker in the division at the moment up top, as we've discussed with Gyökeres. But there's a little bit of aggression about Coventry, I noticed as well. And they made 35 tackles, which I think just sounds ridiculously high. And then I looked a little bit closer, and Eccles, the right wing back, and Hamer, Gus Hamer, the central midfielder, they made 21 tackles between them in this game, which I think is quite the feat. My only gripe with Coventry and Callum O'Hare was when he celebrated with Gyökeres for that goal that sealed the game, I think he went to the crowd, Bamos. And I just think that's a straight red, isn't it, for someone that's not Spanish.
It's Vamos, not Bamos. So
well, no, but you say Bamos, don't you? If you can do it properly, Matt, come on, you know that. You know how Spanish works. I don't know what Sam thinks about that. I mean,
I've got no idea what's going on, to be honest.
If you were going to celebrate in front of the fans, you'd probably say get in, right? Or something along those lines. Would you go Vamos or Bamos if you were not Spanish or foreign?
No.
Callum O'Hare did. I'm sure he did. So for me, he's let himself and Coventry City down there. But in general, they were brilliant at the weekend.
Yeah, adios, Callum, if that ever happens again. One more Championship game we're going to have a look at. Given their respective records, you could have been forgiven for thinking Preston versus Millwall at Deepdale might be a drabble goalless affair, but you'd have been spectacularly wrong. The teams shared six of them, the Lions coming out on the right side of a 4-2 success. Sam, there's always a transfer that slips by that you don't quite notice. I can't say that Zian Fleming was somebody who I'd paid much attention to / ever heard of before Saturday. I hate the Bermondsey Bergkamp moniker. I don't know why we've always got to do this with players, but he looks pretty decent, doesn't he? Got a hat trick here.
He does, yeah. And I saw him in like maybe the second game of the season, and there was something there. But you know when just it wasn't quite happening. He wasn't quite connecting with strikes, or his final delivery was letting him down. But you could see he had quality, and I think it's been a bit of a slow burner. But now you're seeing incredible quality from him. Only three attempts in this game, and obviously scored with all three. It looked like 0-0 when I was like setting up for this game. I thought, oh, there's no chance there's going to be any goals. There've been 10 games at Deepdale with 12 goals this season before this. 6 goals, obviously, on Saturday in this one. And yeah, I've been kind of like speaking about Gary Rowett being more attacking and changing to the 4-2-3-1, which I think has freed them up in an attacking sense. But he actually changed back here when I think the game was in the balance to the 3-5-2, brought Malone on for Honeyman. And that was the big moment in the game because Mill ran away with it from that stage. But yeah, Fleming the story, 8 goals for him now. And Charlie Creswell, 4 for the season for him. Joint highest scoring defender. And I don't know if we've mentioned it on the podcast, but his dad, Richard Creswell, played over 200 times for Preston. So nice day for his family as well. And even in defeat, I wanted to mention Ched Evans because I saw his 2 goals at Reading. I mean, his third in a week doesn't go in if he hasn't scored those 2 at the Majeski, because he is just so confident now. And I looked at the numbers thinking, you know, how's he turned his season around essentially when I think people were seriously criticising him in the Preston fan base. He 3-2, obviously, after not scoring in 34, he had 7 attempts on Saturday. He's had 15 shots in the last 3 games, which have all been starts. In his previous 2 starts and 10 substitute appearances, he had 6 attempts. So these goals, I think, have been coming since he's come back into the side. He's looked different player. So maybe there's been a conversation there with the manager, Ryan Lowe, because he was great in that second half at Reading and obviously scored a good goal here. So yeah, I think we felt that it was a bit of an anomaly, the start of the season, and Preston are starting to score and ship goals as well.
Just going back to Zian Fleming's second goal, the free kick, perfect advert, wasn't it, for the draft excluder? Just straight through the wall, wasn't it? I mean, I always look at that and see someone laying there and I think, oh, it never happens, does it? It never happens. But yeah, it, on occasion it does. And that was a shocking wall, wasn't it, from Preston? I think knowing Ryan Lowe and how sort of feisty and spiky he can get, I reckon he would have torn into his players for that one.
Do you reckon the free kick takers are saying that now, Clarkie? And if there's not someone lying down, keep it low. Keep it low.
Maybe. It might have brought it back
into
fashion.
Didn't even cross my mind, but possibly,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, like it.
Oh, well, Millwall are above Preston and into the playoffs on goal difference, and with a game in hand on pretty much every team around them. So looking good for the Lions. Let's head into League One. Clarkie, you are going to focus on the game at the Pirelli Stadium. Burton and Charlton sharing the points in a 3-3 draw. I mean, some nice goals in this. I really like the last one, the through ball from Chuck Sanike for Jezerim Rakzaki to get the leveler. Burton off the bottom, but only on goal difference. But Charlton with a bit of momentum as well.
Yeah, but I don't think Charlton fans are that happy. This is a game that Charlton would always expect to win against a struggling Burton team. And they were probably lucky, Charlton, to get a point out of the game. Burton had 25 shots to Charlton's 12. So 25 shots from a team that have really struggled this season isn't good. So I think that they've got a lot of work to do off the ball, Ben Garner's team. Look at the previous game. The previous game was 4-4, wasn't it?
7 goals in 2 issues. Games and not won either of them. I don't know why. I said they've got a bit of momentum.
Exactly. Well, they've scored 15 in their last 6. They've got the second highest XG in open play in the division, Charlton, behind Ipswich. So going forward, not a problem. But the reason they're not where Ipswich are in the league is because they're not as good defensively. But you're right about the goals. I mean, two gorgeous little lobs, one from Kirk and then the one from Rakzaki towards the end from a great pass from Chuk Sanike, who still hasn't started a game. I don't know what's going on there. I think he's had six sub appearances, but can't seem to buy a start. But yeah, two little lobs. You don't see that many lobs, do you? It feels like you don't see as many lobs as you used to, or chips, really. But yeah, they're always very, very pleasing on the eye. But yeah, I think Charlton have got a lot of work to do in terms of their structure of the team, central midfield, maybe at the back. They didn't handle Burton's abrasive, direct style very well in the game. And we saw a great goal from Adeboyejo, didn't we? 30-yarder in from distance. So that it was a good point for them, but they'll probably be disappointed they didn't win the game. On Burton, by the way, if they're going to survive, they have to be better at the back. I was looking at what they're conceding. So they've conceded two or more. So if you concede two in a game, that's not great, is it? It's happened in 12 of 18 games, and they've conceded over four times this season. So yeah, we know what they need to work on too.
Tighten up, Brewers. All about the late drama. Meanwhile, at St James's Park, Exeter City beating Peterborough United by 3-2. Topsy-turvy game, this one, Sam. Exeter 1-0 up. Posh then go 2-1 in front. But Giovanni Brown, hotly tipped by this very podcast, proving his worth again.
Yeah, amazing finish. Didn't have to put in a top corner, did he? But stuck it away with a plum bit of panache. 17 goal contributions now in 17 games. That's him level with Aaron Collins. And yeah, I thought the most interesting thing about them was leaving out Sam Nombe, going with Matt Jay, who's not been as consistent as he has been in previous seasons. And Nombe's started the last eight and obviously came on and had a massive effect combined for the for that winner and got the equaliser. So from an Exeter perspective, I thought that was quite interesting, the fact that they've done this consecutive weeks now. 3-2 winners in the FA Cup, last minute goal there as well. Scored 16 in the last three games in all comps. And if you think back to that Plymouth derby, they were brilliant, I thought, for large periods of that as well. So they're going well. But interesting comments from Grant McCann, who basically took responsibility for this defeat. Because at 2-1 up, I think it was the 81st, 82nd minute, when F1 Mason Clark put them 2-1 up, he took him off straight away, brought on Marriott, I think, and changed the system. And they conceded two. So I think all the fingers were pointed at him straight away. And he took responsibility for it, because I think it was quite obvious that they lost their way and maybe lost their balance and lost what got them into a winning position. So maybe that's quite natural. But he kind of had a go at the substitutes and said, like, I'm scared almost to make changes, maybe because it weakens them, but because there's a necessity to freshen things up, basically having a go at the depth. So I wonder how those players are feeling this morning, the ones that are on the bench and trying to come on and have an effect. And I've kind of been there. When I was at Exeter, I remember being pulled in by Paul Tisdale and Steve Perryman after a defeat at Bristol Rovers and basically peppered for not affecting things from the bench. And it can be tricky, because your motivation is not that clear when you're on the bench. It should be, maybe, but you're feeling quite negatively because you've been left out of the 11, especially if that's been happening continually. So he may have a job on his hands, just getting the morale up in the group. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see which way he goes with the tactical setup next time as well, considering...
You don't have to put subs on though, do you? I mean, going back to the Coventry game, that was one thing I had in my notes. Mark Robbins didn't use a sub. No one criticises you when you win. You don't put a sub on. There's no obligation.
No.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, Grant McCann, yeah, and also saying that about the subs, that's not going to go down great, is it?
He was missing a number of players as well, though, so I don't know exactly who he's talking about. He's missing Knight, Ward, Poku, Thompson wasn't available as well, so there's four arguable starters there as well. So, yeah, I thought it was interesting. It was quite good to see him kind of hold his hands up, but quite strange to see him kind of essentially having a go at a few of his squad members.
Interesting approach. We'll see what happens in the next few weeks for Posh. Let's head into League Two, and one of our occasional reminders that Mark Hughes is the manager of Bradford City. The Bantams continuing to move up the table. They're fourth after a 2-0 win at Sutton. They are particularly impressive, Clarkie, on the road. 6 wins in their last 7 away from home.
Yeah, they second best away side in the division, 19 points from their 9 games. So yes, if they can sort out what they do at home, they'll go up, no doubt about that. They are very well organised, I've got to say, under Mark Hughes. Probably shouldn't be surprised at that. He's a vastly experienced manager. There's a real anomaly here in terms of the goals that they concede. They've conceded 8 set-piece goals, which is bad. They've only conceded 5 in open play, which is bonkers, really, to get this far into a season where you're conceding more goals from corners and free kicks than from normal play is vastly unusual. But yeah, this was this was a good performance. Pretty resilient, actually. Sutton, as you'd expect, gave it some in the first half and put them under pressure. Trying to bounce back from losing against Farnborough, of course, in the FA Cup in their last home game. So they gave it everything, but Bradford repelled it. And then their quality shone through, I think, in the second half. Cook gets one just before half time. 12 for the season for Andy Cook. So he's back in the groove, isn't he, as that sort of goal muncher at League Two level. And then the winner was a beaut, wasn't it, from Scott Banks. He's on loan from Palace. I know that a lot of Bradford fans are enjoying watching him. He's tall and he's quite rangy and got a bit of quality about him. We saw that with the goal. So he's a left footer that plays on the right. And he cut inside and just stuck it in that top corner, didn't he? So, yeah, I think Bradford are in with the best shout of getting promotion for the first time in a few years. Proper manager. The only negative at the moment is turning it on at home when teams come to defend, as they often do at Valley Parade. They've got to find a way to unlock the door there. In away games, their organisation and quality on the break has made them an excellent team. And yeah, Abu Issa also came back into the team. First start of the season, did really, really well. So that's a boost for the Bantams as well.
Grimsby 1, Doncaster 3. To finish off. Sam, you can say some interesting and intelligent things about the tactical setup of this game or how it played out, but I just wanted to put it out there after we were critical of a different team's one last week that I'm a massive fan of Doncaster's pink kit here. Absolutely thing yes. of beauty.
Yeah, not got a problem with it myself. Yeah, quite enjoyed it. It's quite a few fetching kits across the League Two spectrum this season. After I slaughtered Forest Green Rovers in seasons past. I think we all scoffed a little bit at those comments from the Doncaster chairman, was it, about Gary McSheffrey and how he hadn't played the style of football that he was supposed to and such like. But I can't remember seeing a fan base kind of turn so quickly in favour of a new manager. I mean, they seem so pleased by what they're seeing from Danny Schofield's side. Yeah, I mean, they lost against Kings Lynn, so that sounds a little bit silly last weekend. But I think in the league, it's four matches now. I think they're unbeaten. And this was the best performance so far. So they're playing some really nice stuff. I thought this was an interesting stat that I noticed. First time they'd scored in the first half in 9 matches. And when they've scored first, they've won all 6 games. So there's real consistency there, managing games to see how they are when they go behind maybe in the next few weeks now that they're new and improved. But this looks like a good side all of a sudden. Clark is going to talk about George Miller in a minute. 9 goals for him now, got a brace here, 11 in all comps, and Kyle Noel as well up to 6 assists for the season, only Ben Whitfield at Barrow's got more. So yeah, this is a side on the up and made a couple of appointments in the backroom staff. Paul Green, a former player, coming in alongside him. It sounds like things are really getting moving. So we are critical when clubs make changes at this stage of the season, but this looks to be one that they've done their due diligence with and got right, because the football seems to be excellent and fans are absolutely thrilled with what they're seeing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 2 points off the playoffs now. Doncaster, which you think will probably be about par for them, or the minimum aim, at least haven't been relegated last term. Grimsby, no wins in 4 in the league, but I'm sure they'll be pretty happy with their start to life back in the EFL. 14th, 11 points from the relegation zone. Okay, that was the weekend review. Next today, a first for the Fit and Proper guest test, as a current EFL manager joins us. Well, I'm very pleased to say that joining us to take the Fit and Proper guest test this week is an actual verified current EFL manager. It's the AFC Wimbledon boss, Johnny Jackson. Johnny, we'll start off with a little bit on Saturday, because that was a great point away at Salford, wasn't it? I mean, I'm using the word great. The BBC website went with uninspiring, but I think great is better.
We'll call it good. That's quite a good point. I mean, it was a good, solid away performance from our point of view. Clean sheet, back-to-back clean sheets. Obviously, we had a good result in the week and it was important that we went there and tried to take something from the game. Yeah, obviously, would have liked to have won it. And it was a game of relatively few chances. That's probably why they've come up with the uninspiring, perhaps. But from our point of view, you know, going away to a good team and sort of limiting them to few chances and being nice and solid, we've got to be pleased with that.
And seven unbeaten all comps now. Is that the benefit of getting a bit of time to get your feet under the table at a new club?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you know, you want time, and obviously we've had to adjust a few things. You know, a lot of the stuff that we was working on in pre-season relied heavily on certain individuals playing, and we lost one or two, well, more than one or two with injury, and it obviously affected the way that we wanted to play, and we've had to sort of find a different way, obviously, different personnel, change formation, and sort of mixed up the style as well. So we've had to be adjustable. Obviously, it's taken a little while, but we feel like we're on real sort of solid ground now, and we look like we're going to compete in every game. We certainly started to keep clean sheets, and we feel like although we didn't get one Saturday, we always carve out chances. So it's sort of moving in the right direction. It's nice to have gone on a little unbeaten run there.
Jacko, you're obviously relatively still quite new to the management game. When you ask ex-players that have just turned to management, who have you taken bits from during your career, which managers, they always say, oh, a little bit from him. I want to know who you the most like that you worked for.
It's a really good question. I've never been asked that question before. Who am I most like? You're right. As far as, you know, your influences and stuff like that, you do take bits from everyone, good and bad. Who am I most like? I'd probably say Chris Powell. I think I like to think I'm a humble sort of guy, working class background, like Powley. He was a Tottenham fan. I was an Arsenal fan. So there was that, you know, and just the way he dealt with people, you know, he had a respectful manner about him, and deals with players as human beings, which I try to do first and foremost, and just try and have a good rapport and that healthy respect. So I think there's a lot of similarities between myself and him, and obviously I liked what I saw in that respect, his management style, and I've tried to take some of that into my own.
Yeah, we were delighted, Johnny, to see you rock up at AFC Wimbledon. Really likeable club, of course, and it gets you back in the management game. But when I think of the original Wimbledon, it's obviously the crazy gang. You don't seem like the craziest manager or fella out there. But what's the sort of craziest old school Wimbledon type thing you might have done so far?
Well, it's interesting. Obviously, when I first come in, it was really sort of trying to play a certain way, playing through sort of around the back through the thirds, and sort of quickly become quite apparent that there's not a massive appetite at this at this club for that. You know, there was quite a bit of talk about getting it forward quicker, and certainly, you know, if you can get into your front men and your wide men and into the box in three or four passes, I was never against that sort of thing. But we have found a sort of a way of going a little bit more direct, if you like, which is the old sort of Wimbledon way. And I've tried to, probably what I have done is try and bring a few characters in that maybe perhaps fit that old school Wimbledon crazy gang mould, in most probably notably Harry Pell, who's one of the strangest boys you'll meet on the pitch. He's like that, embodies that crazy gang spirit, and a bit of a wind-up merchant. Likes to ruffle a few feathers. He's got quality as a footballer as well, certainly at the level. He's a top player. But his favourite thing is getting with his mate Alex Woodyard and trying to wind people up. So I'd say that's probably, you know, I wouldn't class myself particularly as the crazy gang mould, but certainly bringing in a few players along those lines has definitely helped.
I'm sure you were really pleased to get back in. We know how difficult it can be for managers when they lose their first job to get the second. But why do you want such a stressful, high-risk job and way of life? Like, we hear loads about the negatives of management. There's got to be some positives that we don't really know about. Because, I mean, I know it's a great gig and, you know, it's well paid and what have you. But, man, the stress just seems insane.
It is, to be honest. It's interesting. It's interesting that you've asked that, because, I mean, one of our kit men, Trevor, who has been at the club since, the Wimbledon fan, has been at the club since the formation of AFC Wimbledon, was part of all that. And Trevor's always there in the tunnel during the games, watching, obviously doing his job, but watching as a fan. And we always in every game have a moment where I'll give him a look, a puff of the cheeks, and he always says to me, like, why do you want to get into this game? Like, what's the matter with you? Why do you want this pressure? But I guess it's the buzz of, you know, Sam will tell you, and Adrian, like when you played, that winning and losing feeling that you got as a player, was, it's hard to replicate. And for me, you know, replicating that and when I, if I came out of the game, I think I would miss that fighting for the 3 points, that feeling of winning and losing. And certainly it's even more sort of the highs are higher, the lows are lower as a manager, definitely than when you as a player. And actually, I'd probably say like the actual 90 minutes, I don't particularly enjoy that experience just because of the pressure that comes with it. But I love the Monday to Friday. I love sort of being in the office with the guys. That's replicating what you as a player, being in the change room. I love setting my teams up, picking teams, you know, the tactical element of it, and getting your team prepared for the Saturday. And I like the build up to the game on a match day. It's just once that whistle goes, you sort of feel a little bit like sort of out of my control now. And that feeling is not good for the ticker, certainly. And that side of it, the pressure and the tension that comes with that isn't the most enjoyable for me.
You've got the training kit on this morning. You've been out there joining in. I imagine you and Harry Pell will probably be a bit too attacking for a midfield duo, wouldn't you? I wanted to speak about your playing days, just one on that. Who would have been the best partner for you in the middle of the pitch? Who did you love playing with?
I had a few good ones in my time. And actually, my game sort of developed over time. You know, when I started my career, I was a bit more wanting to get on it and be the holder and spray it. And I could let, you know, your partner go. And then later in my career, I forgot about all that nonsense. And all I wanted to do, as you know, was run forward and try and get in the box and score. So I needed someone really sort of disciplined behind me there who would sit in. You know, I played with Kevin Watson at Colchester who just wanted to sit in and dictate the play and allowed me to go forward. I think Dale Stevens at Charlton was a really good sort of partner for me. Again, I mean, Dale could do it a lot. He'd go forward as well, but, you know, a real good sort of foil for me where he would sit in and not vacate the middle and try and get on the ball and allow me to be probably as selfish as I was at times, where I would just think about getting forward, trying to get in the box and score goals and not really be too worried about leaving my mate, because I knew that he'd sweep up and he'd do the ugly side of it and hopefully I'd get all the glory. So I think that probably Dale Stevens at Charlton was one of the best that I liked to play with.
Johnny, we really appreciate your time today. We always finish with a super serious question. Now, I'm absolutely fascinated to get your answer to this. Sam tells me that you turned him on to The Sopranos. So I want to know, like, now that so much time has passed between the last episode and today, have you made peace with that final scene? What was it all about? What happened next?
In my opinion, and I've done extensive research on this question, I think all the signs were there that the screen went blank, because that was the end for Big Tone. I think that was the final chapter for Tony. If you watch the scene, a lot of it is from his point of view, looking at the doors, the bell was ringing, and Meadows trying to park and all that. And then the sequence goes that it goes on his face, then it goes on the door, and then when it's meant to go back onto his face, bang, it goes black. And actually, they'd spoken about that previously. Him and Bobby Bacalar, I think, had spoken about how you don't hear it coming and it'll just go black and that'll be that. So I think, in my opinion, that's probably what they was going for. But the fact that we're talking about it 10, 15 years later obviously means it's open to interpretation and shows you the majesty of the programme.
Solid analysis, that, I've got to say.
Really good. That's much better than any analysis on football that we've had in this podcast so far. It means, therefore, Sam Adrian, that Johnny passes the fit and proper guest test, I'm assuming.
Of course he does, yeah.
Flew would have been it, in the balance it? Until the last answer.
I got myself out of trouble then.
I won't ask you who your Paulie Walnuts is at Wimbledon. I'll just say, Johnny, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Cheers, fellas. See you later.
Right, next today, it's scouting report time. Right, Sam, the player that you've picked, I'm going to get you to pronounce his name, because even though you sent us a picture of you having written it down phonetically, I'm still not 100% sure.
That wasn't actually me that had written it down. It was me panicking pre-match at the Den early part of the season against QPR. So I asked Nick, who does the QPR commentary, who kindly, I think, had already done that for various members of the media. So Tim Arobanum, I think, is how we're going. There's a G in there, isn't there? So there's a silent G at play.
Works for lasagna. Can work for this guy too.
Yeah, absolutely. And now I said this guy was like Zidane last week against Huddersfield, which I was overcooking it a little bit, overcooking a lasagna, overplaying it somewhat. But he's got this kind of, I'm not reading many stats down here because he hasn't scored or assisted yet this season. So, and he hasn't had many shots, but he's had 19 without scoring, but he's getting closer. He had an amazing attempt in this game against Huddersfield. But the reason I want to talk about him is just how stylish he is. And in this game, he was deployed alongside Sam Field in a two-man defensive midfield role. And I've not seen him play this position before. And maybe, given his lack of potency in the opposition's 18-yard box, this could be the future for this lad. 19 years old. And QPR lost, and it was a bit of a disaster on the night. But he was brilliant. Can glide past people. There's a bit of an Eze about him, the way that he can do that. Really good range of passing. I've not seen him hit the crossfield balls like he did in this game. And a bit of the Zidane, that the ball just seems stuck to his feet. So I think it showed the trust that Mick Beale has in him as well, playing him in this role where he had to have a bit of discipline, had to be able to be defensively minded at times. He's quite tenacious. He looks like, you know, a bit of a flair player, that he's got that language style. He's a dribbler, but he can get his foot in as well. Couple of key contributions so far this season. He won the winning penalty against Reading. Lyndon Dykes converted it, breaking into the box for an important goal. And like I said, in this game, he's getting closer. He worked the goalkeeper, Nichols, with a brilliant attempt, a brilliant volley. But he's looking like a top championship player now, in my opinion. And as Clarkie said previously, missing at the weekend. And I think that was a big reason, him and Kenneth Pyle, the left-back for QPR, big reason I think that they suffered at the hands of Coventry. And again, 19 years old, Mick Beale clearly loves him. He's played for Aston Villa. He's played for England under-19s in that successful Euros campaign, came off the bench in the final, and he's played for the 20s already. So really talented lad, capable of getting the goals and the assists. So let's keep an eye on him this season, because I'm sure that's what he needs to add to his game to get people really talking about him.
Yeah, somebody Mick Beale obviously knows well. Clarkie, you've gone for George Miller, which I can say without any sort of problem. We mentioned him briefly earlier this season. Another striker with 9 goals to his name, albeit in League Two. What is it about the Doncaster man that you particularly like?
Well, just he's not the typical player that we would scout. He's not young. He's the opposite of someone like Irobinum. He's not going to get to scale those heights. He is probably a League Two, League One front man. But I just think it's nice to highlight somebody when they're performing really, really well and maybe better than they have done in the past. George Miller is 24. It's the 8th team that he's played for. He got a move to Borough. It didn't work out. They loaned him everywhere. And now he's ended up at Doncaster. And he has been excellent for them. 12 goals last season for Walsall. He's got 11 in all competitions, actually, this season already. So he's having an absolute stormer. He's got the same stat as Sam mentioned earlier. George Miller's goals have been worth an extra 11 points to Doncaster. You know, he's turned draws into victories. So I've had a look at some of his goals and his form, and almost all of the goals, there's a couple of penalties in there, almost all of the goals come from running off the shoulder of the last man. He's not refined. He's not got a great touch. He's not super at holding the ball up. But when Doncaster attack, he, and Sam will know all about this, he gets on the shoulder of a defender, or he gets in front of them, and he backs his pace, and he makes run after run after run, and he runs in beyond. And you know, on numerous occasions this season, those runs have paid off. In the weekend, he ran in behind, didn't he, from a counter-attack to score a goal. The first goal, he made a channel run down the left-hand side and crossed it in, and then got on the end of the return pass. So he's someone that he gets defenders running towards their own goal. And there's a lot of value in that, particularly at League One level. He's right-footed, very calm in front of goal. And yeah, good on him. Sometimes it takes a while for footballers to sort of grow into their skin as an EFL player. Up until last year, he'd not got close to 10 goals a season. Got 12 for Walsall. He's on 11 in all comps, as I said, at the moment. So he's on for a 20-plus campaign. And he could be one of those players that knocks around at League 2, League 1 level for the next 5 years, banging in loads of goals. That's the sort of player he's developing into.
So that is George Miller looking to fire Doncaster to promotion and Tim Arubinam on loan at QPR from Aston Villa, the subjects of this week's scouting report. All right, we're nearly done for the day, but of course we've got our tweet of the week. It comes from David Wheeler of Wickham. Now, I really like David Wheeler's Twitter output. Generally, he talks a lot about mental health. He talks a lot about green issues. He's big on carbon neutrality and the fact that FIFA are saying that the World Cup is going to be carbon neutral and absolutely is not. Who'd have thought FIFA would be disingenuous about something that is shocking? But here we are analysing his tweet, chaps. It's a quote tweet from the weekend. Wickham's original tweet was FT:FGR0-2 #chairboys, three successive wins and clean sheets on the road, FGR VWYC. Wheeler has quote tweeted it, solid performance on the road from the whole team. So chuffed to get the opener, but what a goal from @G McCleary12, hand over the mouth emoji, applause emoji. Thanks to the fans that travelled to the greenest club in the world, thumbs up emoji, blue heart emoji. Sam, the reason this caught my eye was the fact that he's made reference to the fact that Forest Green are green in a very literal sense. Did you enjoy this?
Well, you know, I played with him, so this isn't very fair. And I would count him as a friend, very fond of him. And he's used the word chuffed there. And he's shown a little bit of his own personality by mentioning the greenest club in the country. So for those two reasons alone, it's a lot better than the type of stuff you throw my way, Matt. That said, it's not vintage stuff.
You've got to admire the hand over the mouth emoji. I think if ever there was a goal that warranted that sort of Bergkamp celebration, is that outside of the right peg.
That's fair. I like chuffed. Yeah, like I said, and I like showing a little bit about what he's about. That coming from the bloke here who shows the least personality in tweets ever. But yeah, so it's a 7 out of 10 for Dave.
Should it have been a green heart? That's the question mark. That's the big question, isn't it?
Was it a green heart?
No, it was a blue.
Oh.
You know, he's a Wickham player. I can understand it, but yeah, you might have just taken it to the next level.
He is right. One of the few current players who might actually be listening as well. So that's the other reason that I've gone proper soft.
I liked it, Clarky. I liked it from David Wheeler, but Wickham admin, he went a bit rogue this weekend. I don't know if you saw this. They put a clip up of that brilliant Gareth McCleary goal from like an alternative angle. And Wickham wrote, "Ricardo Quaresma walked so Gareth McCleary could run and score goals like this. Outrageous @G McCleary12. Ricardo Quaresma feels like a strange point of reference to use.
Paul Merson, don't you? I love outside of the foot, you go Merce, surely. Couldn't kick it with any other part of either foot.
I'm a little bit older. Yeah, Merce loved an outside of the foot. He loved a chip, did him all the time. But the it's Liam Brady, isn't it? Liam Brady's the one with the most, one of the most famous outside of the foot goals. Ricardo Quaresma can't even think of it. Can't think of the reference. So,
I know he got one, but I can't think of the game.
No, and also a player with like one of the most disappointing career arcs in recent memory, from where he was touted to be to where he ended up, whereas Gareth McCleary has had a fine EFL.
Wickham admin obviously knows a lot more about football than we do. It's just, it smacks of geekiness, doesn't it?
If you're listening, Matt, if you do the Twitter admin.
We do, don't we?
I was just about to cover ourselves by saying it is a club that we have a lot of time for because they've been great.
And they've got a great car park, you know.
Actually,
it's not a great car park because you can get stuck there for a long time, but it's a very famous car park.
It's a sought-after car park.
What is your favourite EFL car park?
I'll tell you what I liked about Wickham the last time I went there. There was a little tented village in behind the main stand with a band, and you could get some, beers with not big queues and plastic glasses, keeping fans there after the final whistle. I've got a lot of time for that. So hopefully that's enough Wickham brown nosing to cover our tracks.
Well, David Wheeler can have a word with them about the plastic glasses and maybe some alternatives that are a bit more environmentally friendly that they could think of. But a compostable pint's probably not a thing, is it? I think all this chat indicates that we have come to the end of today's What the EFL, this week's What the EFL. In fact, hey, if you'd like to leave us a review, some people have done this already on iTunes and other platforms. We do really appreciate that. What it does is it helps other fans of the Football League find the podcast. If you want to sponsor us, remember, just drop us an email, whattheefl@yahoo.com. And on Twitter, we are at EFL. What the? Thanks, chaps, for your time today. It's been a pleasure as always. We're going to keep going throughout the World Cup, even despite the lack of championship action. It'll give us a bit more time to focus on Leagues 1 and 2. And it's worth pointing out that Leagues 1 and 2 are continuing, Clarkie, because some people won't have much interest in this World Cup for a variety of reasons, but there's still plenty of good football to be fair.
Exactly. And a few championship players involved in the World Cup finals. Maybe we can do the odd scouting report on some World Cup stars. I don't know.
Josh Sargent's winner against England. Yeah, looking forward to that.
Exactly. But yeah, now Leagues 1 and 2, spotlight's on you now. Let's see what you got.
We will bring you up to date with what happened in those divisions in our show next Monday. Until then, thanks for your company today. We'll catch up with you again soon.